From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Ledson.
And is this the key that would actually...
Yes, that's...
Here's me a couple weeks ago. I'm in a place that, well, I don't really want to be.
So, Al, why don't you have a seat right here in the crew commander's chair, and I'm going to take a seat here in the deputy crew commander's chair.
I'm pretending to be a crew commander at a former nuclear missile site. I'm sitting in a cushy chair, staring at a wall of dials and buttons labeled things like readiness control and stage one pressure.
Let's say it's 1983. NATO is conducting an exercise known as Able Archer.
My guide is Yvonne Morris. If anyone knows what to do in this commander's chair, she does. In the 1980s, Yvonne was a lieutenant in the Air Force. She led crews at this nuclear missile site and others just like it.
NATO had moved a lot of forces around. And at the moment, don't touch that.
The old-fashioned light-up buttons tempt me, although they terrify me too. Before we get to any buttons, though, let me tell you why we're here. President Trump is proposing to overhaul the U.S. nuclear arsenal. He said a lot of things that make a lot of people wonder how willing he would be to use nuclear weapons, particularly facing off with North Korea.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
The president is the only one who can authorize using nukes. I wanted to get some kind of feel for what it's like to be a part of that chain of command. We drove a half an hour south of Tucson to see what's essentially a fenced-in spot in the desert.
Watch your head here.
35 feet underground, Yvonne takes us past a set of gigantic concrete doors.
So how the crew would enter the missile site is through a series of these blast doors that each weigh 3 tons.
This missile site was built in 1963. It held a Titan II ballistic missile that could deliver a nuclear warhead halfway around the world.
So we'll head down this way.
Past the entry blast doors, an underground corridor opens up. It takes a couple minutes to walk right up to the missile.
This is it, huh?
That's it. It's 103 feet tall. It's 10 feet in diameter. The nose cone up above, the part that's brown, that's where the warhead would have been.
U.S. Air Force is stenciled in black paint on the shiny metal of the Titan II. These were taken out of service when missile safety and accuracy improved. This launch site became a museum in the 1980s.
Random question.
Mm-hmm.
If the government decided that they wanted to use this site to launch another missile, could they do that pretty easily? I mean, it seems like...
It would be easier to start over with Legos and popsicle sticks.
Okay.
Because you just can't get these parts.
We head deeper into the silo.
Are you claustrophobic?
No, not really.
Okay, because we're gonna be in this elevator for about a minute. Okay, in you go.
This ride takes us 125 feet underground. We'll be directly below the rockets that would have shot this missile into space.
You need to keep your situational awareness because the headspace there is very restricted, so just be careful.
Gotcha.
All right, so I'm gonna let you walk in first. Just keep in mind what I told you.
Yep, gotcha. Situational awareness. Wow.
I feel so small standing under this old missile. It looms above me, a giant tube of silver and white. I forget Yvonne's warning and tip my head back to look up and see metal, metal, metal. Finally, sky.
Being here, it's hard to process the emotions, right? Because it's like, it's amazing, but also it's, you know, the purpose of it is to kill people.
And back in that commander's chair, that's what's on my mind. This combination of brilliant human ingenuity and deadly destructive power.
We have to get to our stations. We need to get ready to copy an emergency action message.
Yvonne is running me through a simulation. A president has just ordered a nuclear strike. We copy down the letters and the numbers coming over the radio. We double check them.
4-3 Lima.
Okay. So, Commander, they match. Do you agree?
I agree.
All right. Then we have a valid launch order.
The missile here doesn't have a warhead. It doesn't even have fuel. Still, I'm feeling uncomfortable.
So, crew commander, typically what you do is you would give a countdown, 3, 2, 1, turn.
Turn, not push. There's no launch button. To fire a missile, two crew members turn separate keys at the same time.
And then you would count down backwards, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and say release, because the key switches have to be held in the on position by both officers for 5 seconds to initiate the launch sequence. So, on your mark, Commander.
On my mark, 3, 2, 1, turn. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
That klaxon means that the stage one engine has fired. Al and I have now started something that we can't stop.
It would have taken about half an hour before the missile delivered a nuclear explosion thousands of miles away. That's how nuclear missiles would have been launched 40 years ago. I wanted to know how it works now.
The actual process, that's still very similar. You still have a process where you have to authenticate your launch order. The officers have to cooperate, just like we had to cooperate. And it still takes turning two keys, same moment in time.
Somehow, we're living in an era where the danger of nuclear war no longer feels like some abstract piece of history.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime.
Today, we're looking at nuclear threats. We'll take you to Iran, we'll talk North Korea, but we begin at home. His reveals, Emily Harris.
President Trump threatened Rocket Man last fall. A couple of months later, this happened.
We are concerned that the president of the United States is so unstable, is so volatile, has a decision-making process that is so quixotic that he might order a nuclear weapons strike that is wildly out of step with U.S. national security interests.
That's Chris Murphy. He's a Democratic senator from Connecticut. He's speaking about whether this president, or any president, should have the sole authority to order a nuclear attack. This is at a Senate hearing in November.
Our first witness today is General Bob Kaler, commander of the United States Strategic Command from 2011 to 2013.
Bob Kaler wears a coat and tie. His horn-rimmed glasses remind me of a style that was popular back when nuclear weapons were invented. In front of a full hearing room, including a few anti-nuclear activists, the now-retired general tries to dial back concerns.
For nuclear decision-making at the highest level, it's a consultative process.
Yes, the president is the only person who can order a launch. But Kaler said that top generals, advisors, and government lawyers could question that decision. Senator Ron Johnson, a Wisconsin Republican, wants to know exactly how they would challenge the president.
You believe that is your responsibility, and you have the authority to
Yes.
say this is not legal because we have not followed the steps, we haven't gone through the process.
I would have said, I have a question about this, and I would have said, I'm not ready to proceed.
And then what happens?
Well, you know, as I say, I don't know exactly. You don't know. No, fortunately, we've never, these are all hypothetical scenarios.
One hypothetical scenario brought up in the hearings was the president waking up generals in the middle of the night, declaring that he wants to launch a nuclear strike. Michaela Dodge, a senior defense policy analyst at the Conservative Heritage Foundation, says that notion is ridiculous.
The idea that the president says, I have a headache today, let's nuke North Korea, that's just silly. It's just plain silly.
Michaela knows a lot about nuclear policy, and she gets a little annoyed when I start asking about controversy over the president's temperament. Despite Trump's tweet about his big nuclear button, Michaela believes he understands the seriousness of nuclear war. Plus, she says changing the command structure would create delays and uncertainties, and that could make the U.S. appear vulnerable to its enemies.
introducing problems into nuclear command and control because you don't like who is the president, which, by the way, Americans elected. That is not the president's problem. That is not the command and control problem.
What problem is it?
It's maybe problem on the perception of people who perceive personality of the president.
Some lawmakers have introduced bills to limit presidential power to order a nuclear strike. But no one I talked to for this story thinks those have a real chance of going anywhere. Congress is fractured, and it would be a big deal to change. The U.S. president has had sole authority since the first bomb was dropped in 1945. Then Michaela mentions a different threat. She doesn't worry about Trump.
What I worry about is how the Russians think about using nuclear weapons.
This makes a lot of sense to hear from her. She grew up in the Czech Republic, a tiny country that's been a front line of the Russian-U.S. rivalry for decades. And she's not the only one wary of Russian nukes.
Russia continues to conduct dangerous nuclear exercises directed against the United States, NATO allies.
That's Republican Congressman Mike Rogers.
I think we're all concerned about the Russian doctrine of escalating to de-escalate.
That's Democratic Congresswoman Susan Davis. And here's Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis.
Moscow advocates a theory of nuclear escalation for military conflict, and we cannot ignore their investments in nuclear weapons.
Last month, the Trump administration rolled out its new nuclear weapons strategy. It's a 100-page document, and it mentions Russia 127 times. That's more than twice as often as North Korea or China. So what's the plan all about?
As part of our defense, we must modernize and rebuild our nuclear arsenal, hopefully never having to use it, but making it so strong and so powerful that it will deter any acts of aggression by any other nation or anyone else.
While some people see Trump's temperament as a reason to rein in the president, the new plan argues for expanding his nuclear options. It envisions the biggest spike in nuclear weapons spending since the Cold War. It doubles the current costs for several years, adding up to more than $1.2 trillion over the next three decades. President Obama also favored modernizing the arsenal, but President Trump takes things further. He's made it clear the U.S. might use nukes in response to a non-nuclear attack, and he wants new kinds of weapons.
We're going to be so far ahead of everybody else in nuclear like you've never seen before.
This feels familiar. During the arms race of the Cold War, the U.S. and Russia, then the Soviet Union, upped their arsenals to threaten total annihilation. A 1983 TV movie called The Day After captured the fears of those times. In the movie, multiple mushroom clouds erupt across the Midwest plains. In a flash, families are transformed into glowing skeletons. I was a kid then, and like many, I sometimes lay awake at night, afraid of nuclear war. So are we headed back to that threat of U.S.-Russia annihilation? Maybe. Maybe not. Trump's new plan aims for flexibility, nuclear weapons tailored to respond to different threats. Experts say there's always a possibility of annihilation, but cataclysmic nuclear war is not the only imagined scenario.
There are a whole host of circumstances under which nuclear weapons might be used that would fall short of the cataclysmic.
Tom Mankin is a former top military guy. He was a deputy assistant secretary of defense under George W. Bush. Now, Tom runs a think tank that focuses on military spending, the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. Tom says the crucial thing to understand about nuclear policy is that much of the weapons power lies in threats alone.
So we use nuclear weapons routinely, even when we're not thinking about it.
You mean we use them without exploding them?
Exactly.
U.S. officials worry about several specific nuclear threats from Russia. They say Moscow is not complying with a treaty. They believe Russia has many small nuclear weapons that could be used in flexible ways. and they worry Russia would choose to use nukes too quickly. Russia counters this.
General, thank you. I'm Alexei Fomenko, second secretary at the Russian embassy.
Russian diplomat Alexei Fomenko is a portly man with a lush, dark beard. During a recent policy forum in Washington, D.C., he stood at a mic in the aisle holding a small white notepad, and he asked the top general in charge of U.S. nukes a question. Why does the U.S. think the threat of Russian nuclear weapons is so real?
How did you make the determination that Russia was increasing its reliance on nuclear weapons, especially since, in fact, we're decreasing the reliance?
U.S. Strategic Commander General John Hyten stood on stage in a dark blue uniform with four silver stars lining each shoulder and a panel of ribbons decorating his chest. He looked directly at Fomenko and replied.
There's an interesting dichotomy in our nation. We call it the say-do gap, where you say one thing, but you do another. So we listen very closely to what your president says. We listen very closely to what your leadership say. And then we watch very, very closely of what your nation does.
In essence, we don't trust you. This feels like deja vu. But some things have changed since the Cold War. Over the past two decades, the number of nuclear weapons ready to go has dropped dramatically. That's because of U.S.-Russia treaties. However, those treaties don't cover all weapons or all countries. And now almost 10 nations have nuclear weapons at their leaders' fingertips.
That's Reveal's Emily Harris. As Emily mentioned, President Trump has been focused on Iran, saying it's a real threat when it comes to nuclear safety. To find out how real, we sent a reporter to Tehran. That's coming up on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.